For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Rebecca Foster. Four confirmation hearings are underway in Washington, including two of the most contentious choices for Donald Trump's cabinet. Just 2 days before Mr. Trump is sworn in as U.S. president, lawmakers are grilling his choices over health care, commerce, the environment, and America's presence at the U.N. From Washington, Nina Maria Potts reports.
The series of confirmation hearings have revealed deepening differences between incoming U.S. President Donald Trump and the sometimes more hawkish people he's picked to manage his government. Billionaire Wilbur Ross, poised to become the next U.S. Commerce Secretary, told lawmakers he's pro-sensible trade, pledging to work with Mr. Trump to negotiate trade deals in America's interests. South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley broke with Donald Trump by opposing his call for a Muslim registry and by defending NATO, saying Russia couldn't be trusted.
Russia is trying to show their muscle right now. It is what they do, and I think we always have to be cautious.
Tom Price, Mr. Trump's choice for health secretary, was grilled over his plan to revise the nation's healthcare system, which was still short on detail, and over his past financial investments, which he insists are legal.
Iraqi soldiers say they are preparing to retake the western part of Mosul from the so-called Islamic State. It comes after Iraqi soldiers, helped by a U.S.-led coalition, announced they took control of eastern Mosul on Tuesday. FSN's Nick Harper has this report.
Mosul represents the final city stronghold of the Islamic State, and therefore crucial in the Iraqi government's counter-terrorism offensive. It's made fast progress through the east of the city after starting the campaign to retake Mosul in October. Counter-terrorism services have reportedly secured the eastern bank of the Tigris River. However, the other side of the river, the western part of Mosul, could be more problematic as it includes the old city with maze-like streets. A US-led coalition is coordinating airstrikes, while on the ground, government troops are working alongside Kurdish Peshmerga, Sunni Arab tribesmen, and Shia fighters.
The Russian Defense Ministry says it has joined forces with Turkey to bomb Islamic State militants in Syria for the first time. Julia Lyubova reports from Moscow.
The Russian Ministry of Defense says that Russian and Turkish forces are targeting so-called Islamic State militants in Syria. 9 Russian fighter jets and 8 Turkish jets are involved in the operation. The operation is around the town of Al-Bab, around 40 kilometers northeast of Aleppo. This is the first time that Russian and Turkish forces are teaming up like this. According to the Russian Ministry of Defense spokesman, this is an agreement with the Syrian government. This operation comes ahead of talks on Syria that are due to be held in the Kazakhstani capital Astana on 23rd of January. Julia Lyubova, Moscow.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Thank you very much, Rebecca Foster. How are you? It's Wednesday. It is January 18th, 2017. Wet, miserable old Manchester. The only thing miserable about the city is the weather. As usual, it is a packed old show. Tweet at Richie Allen Show. Email richie@richieallen.co.uk.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England. This is the Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com. It's the Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association with davidicke.com. And now, live from Manchester, England, here is Richie Allen.
Lovely stuff. Hesh, if you're listening at Alternate Current Radio, tell me if the Boiler Room has gone back to Wednesday or if it's still on Thursdays, and I'll be sure to give it a good old plug. Great show, that, the Boiler Room. We are live on alternatecurrentradio.com, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, davidicke.com, and the TuneIn app. Gave you the Twitter handle, at Richie Allen Show. Email richie@richieallen.co.uk. Later on in the programme, I'll be joined for an extended chat by Linda Moulton-Hell. She is an investigative journalist, author and documentary filmmaker, best known for her work in the field of ufology. Have I said that right? Ufology. I think so. She's also investigated and presented evidence that the US government is colluding with aliens. Fascinating lady. Did a sound check earlier on with Linda. Lovely woman. Lovely voice. And she met David years ago at ITN Television. Both of them were there, so they know each other. I mentioned that to David today. I had Linda on, and he said, oh, met that lady some years ago. Interesting woman, and has done some interesting work. And I know there's a huge interest in this subject among our listeners. Not something I know an awful lot about, but I suppose it makes for a better conversation. So we'll do that a bit later on as well. So I hope you're well then. How are you getting on in early January? I've read somewhere, I don't know if it's true or not, but it tends to be a kind of a month where people are a bit down in themselves. Following the Christmas break and the festivities when you've spent a bit of time with your friends and family, January can be a bit miserable, a bit dull, a bit grey, a bit lifeless, a bit listless. So I hope you're in good form and you're fighting the blues. It won't be long before there's a stretch in the evenings. I mean, again, I'm somebody who very much believes that going to work in the morning when it's pitch black and then coming home, leaving your place of work, and as you leave your place of work, it's pitch black, I know that it has a serious effect on the psyche of us, of you and I. Now, I'm very lucky with the job I have. You know, effectively working for myself and doing things for myself, I do get a chance to step out and breathe the fresh air and then come back, and I can fit my day around when I want to do it. But I used to be in that world, and I sympathise. And I'm genuinely saying, if you are feeling a bit blue, hang on. It won't be long. The weeks will fly. I'll keep you company in these dark evenings anyway, between now and the spring. Let's have a chat, you and I, then. There is a lot to talk about. Now, in a few minutes' time, I'm going to talk about the campaign against anti-Semitism, because I eventually got a reply from them to my request for them to provide a spokesperson, hopefully Stephen Silverman. They got back to me and declined to come on the programme, and I will, a little bit later in the hour or in the half hour, talk about that and what's going on. By the way, and it's important that you listen to me carefully now, if you believe that David Icke is racist, is anti-Semitic, or anybody associated with davidicke.com, or indeed with this programme, if you believe that, you can call only 0161 408 2017. No, don't do that. Don't do that. I am a proper plonker, me. Let me give you that again. Right. If you believe David Icke is anti-Semitic, if he's a racist, or anybody else associated with him, call this number, 0161 408 and then 1984. 0161 408 1984. Do not call me if you are a supporter of David Icke, if you are a reader of his books and somebody who is in agreement with him. If you believe what the campaign against anti-Semitism is saying about David Icke, call me on 0161 408 1984. Okay? Not if you're a regular listener to this programme and if you're a supporter and a reader of David's work. More on that a bit later. Now, Boris Johnson, the UK Foreign Secretary, has warned EU leaders not to give the UK punishment beatings for Brexit in the manner of some World War II movie. He said to Johnson that penalising escape was not in the interests of our friends and our partners. Yesterday, as reported here, Theresa May set out her Brexit strategy, including leaving the EU single market. Now, the European Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker promised to work for good results from Brexit talks. Meanwhile, the Supreme Court, listen up, this is important, has announced it will give its verdict next Tuesday on whether the government must get MPs' approval before actually triggering Article 50. So that Supreme Court hearing, which happened in December, their ruling will be early in the morning next Tuesday. And the BBC reports today, and this is hilarious, HSBC Bank announced it was prepared to move 1,000 staff from London to Paris when the UK leaves the European Union. Imagine that. HSBC have said, we're going to move 1,000 staff to Paris when the UK leaves the European Union. Do you know what I'd do with the HSBC? You know what I would do to them? I would penalise them for this. Now, you might remember that Nicholas Wilson, Mr. Ethical, has been on this programme a couple of times over the last 2 years. And he reported on a £750 million fraud perpetrated by HSBC, and a subsidiary HFC bank bought by HSBC back in 2003. Because when HSBC bought HFC Bank, HFC Bank were excuse me, fraudulently charging defaulting account holders with illegal charges. And it was doing that through its solicitors, Restons and Waitmans. And the fraud basically involved the accounts of John Lewis, Dixon's, Curry's, PC World and others. And Nicholas Wilson worked at Waitmans and reported HSBC to the Law Society. That was back in 2006, and the Law Society upheld his complaint that the charges were illegal. However, the charges continued to be applied until the Office of Fair Trading made an order against the bank to stop adding them. To this date, hundreds of thousands of victims have never been compensated by HSBC, who continues to lie pathologically about their liability. It's at least £750 million. You know what I would do if I was the British government? You can move your 1,000 staff to Paris when you pay us £750 million. You gangsters. We'll take that money then and we'll plunge it straight into the NHS. That's not going to happen. You and I know that. If you've never heard Nicholas Wilson, go to our YouTube channel and look for Nicholas Wilson, Mr. Ethical, and you will hear those interviews with him. Fascinating stuff. Anyway, Boris Johnson. This is what Boris Johnson had to say. Have I got the clip? I have. I'm working hard today. This is Boris Johnson.
Disappointing facts is that in the last 25 years since the dawn of the single market, it's other countries, actually including India, that have done better at exporting into the single market than we in the UK have. So we have no terrors about this prospect. I think that if Monsieur Hollande wants to administer punishment beatings to anybody who chooses to escape, rather in the manner of some sort of World War II movie, then I don't think that that is the way forward. And I think actually it's not in the interests of our friends.
Oh, there's been a big outcry, of course, today, a massive outcry. You can't say that. You can't mention Nazi concentration guards, or you can't mention concentration camps or the Second World War in any context. Sack Boris, anti-Semitism, anti-Semitism. What Johnson said was right, of course. Countries outside the bloc trade more with European Union countries than the UK. Now, as for insulting Francois Hollande, the French are world class when it comes to insulting the English.
You don't frighten us, English pig dogs. Go and boil your bottom, sons of a silly person. I'll blow my nose at you, so-called Arthur King. You and all your silly English kniggets. I don't want to talk to you no more, you empty-headed animal food trough whopper. I fart in your general direction. Your mother was a hamster and your father smelt of elderberries.
The French are bastards. Right, I meant to mention yesterday, incidentally, at the end of her speech on what the government would aim to achieve in the exit negotiations, Theresa May said, almost word for word, what I've been saying on this show and Sunday View for nearly a year.
Britain wants to remain a good friend and neighbour to Europe. Yet I know there are some voices calling for a punitive deal that punishes Britain and discourages other countries from taking the same path. That would be an act of calamitous self-harm for the countries of Europe, and it would not be the act of a friend. Britain would not, indeed we could not, accept such an approach. And while I am confident that this scenario need never arise, while I am sure a positive agreement can be reached, I am equally clear that no deal for Britain is better than a bad deal for Britain. Because we would still be able to trade with Europe, we would still be free to strike trade deals across the world, and we would have the freedom to set the competitive tax rates and embrace the policies that would attract the world's best companies and biggest investors to Britain. And if we were excluded from accessing the single market, we would be free to change the basis of Britain's economic model. But for the EU, it would mean new barriers to trade with one of the biggest economies in the world. It would jeopardise investments in Britain by EU companies worth more than £500 billion. It would mean a loss of access for European firms to the financial services of the City of London. It would risk exports from the EU to Britain worth around £290 billion every year. And it would disrupt the sophisticated and integrated supply chains upon which many EU companies rely.
In a nutshell, you'll punish nobody. Was Theresa May being sincere yesterday when she said that? It's hard to know, really. You know, a word that comes up on programmes like this is compartmentalisation. No idea what Theresa May knows or doesn't know. She's a puppet. She is a puppet. You know, the single market has never been a good thing for the UK. As we've said time and time again on this programme, since 1973, the UK hasn't increased its trade with EU member states. Now on that, here's Richard Tice. Now Tice is the co-founder of Leave.eu and also Leave Means Leave. Richard Tice.
Every country in the world, as I've said many times, has access to the single market, except North Korea. The point is, we won't be a member of the single market. And the single market...
You want free access, don't you? And that's going to take a long time to get that deal.
The single market has been a really bad deal for the United Kingdom over the last 12 years. It's led to wage suppression of the lowest paid workers. It's led to unnecessary regulation for the 90% of businesses that don't export to the EU. We've paid contribute a huge net contribution. We're the second biggest net contributor, and yet we have a huge deficit. I mean, they should be paying us, not we pay them. So it's been a bad deal. The sooner we leave it, the better. And I think people now finally are waking up to that.
Yeah, that's pretty much it in a nutshell. Drove wages down, destroyed industry, including fishing, and so on, so on, so on. You're with the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2, alternatecurrentradio.com and the TuneIn app. Let me mention that the terrific Boiler Room programme is live at 2 a.m. Friday morning UK time, which is 9 p.m. Eastern time on Thursday night on alternatecurrentradio.com. Now, I did some radio a bit earlier on. I did some work with Maria Heller. And I've had a lot going on today. I've been on the phone all day. My voice is a little bit croaky. I'm hoping it holds out for the rest of the programme. A bit dry, but we'll move on. Going to take a very quick break. When we come back from that, I'm going to talk about the campaign against anti-Semitism, who were eventually in touch with the programme today. I did email them yesterday and tweeted them early yesterday morning. They hadn't come back to me. I badgered them a little bit, and they eventually provided me with a statement, which I'm going to read you in about 90 seconds after these.
Do not risk putting another pound in your bank account until you've heard this message. It's Jim Rickards here, best-selling author of Currency Wars and The Death of Money. But today I'm urging you to claim a free copy of my brand new book, The Road to Ruin. Visit theroadtoruin.co.uk for full details now. Inside, I uncover the financial elite's secret ICE-9 plan to take full control of your hard-earned cash. To see how, visit theroadtoruin.co.uk right away. It's not too late to prepare. Claim your free copy at theroadtoruin.co.uk today.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones,
smartphones, NAS and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com.
Welcome back to the show. Thanks for tuning in Wednesday, 18th of January, 2017. Good to be chatting with you. Lots of tweets there. We'll come back to the tweets at some stage and get into them. Thanks for that. And thanks to those of you, including Diddy. Diddy, how are you? It's actually Rachel, but it's Diddy Rachel on Twitter, who did write to investigations@antisemitism.uk. It seems a lot of people who went to see David Icke on Saturday did take up Stephen Silverman's request or his invitation to email him with their experience. Many of them have copied that to the email address we gave you earlier on, which was publishing@davidicke.com. Let me just repeat that. publishing@davidicke.com. So if you were at the event on Saturday and you want to email the campaign against anti-Semitism, email investigations@antisemitism.uk and please copy that to publishing@davidicke.com. Thanks to Diddy Rachel. Love these Twitter names. Good stuff for your message on Twitter. So, Stephen Silverman and the campaign against anti-Semitism. Just a reminder, last week they contacted the venue, the O2 Apollo Theatre. In fact, strangely enough, as I pointed out yesterday, it was a bizarre sequence of events. The Guardian and then Channel 4 News asking to speak with David. This is very unusual in itself. It's not unusual. He gets asked from time to time by these mainstream publications to speak, but not like that. And then after he'd agreed to talk to Channel 4 News, the venue was contacted by the campaign against anti-Semitism, who made a number of ridiculous allegations about David, saying he was racist and anti-Semitic. And they attributed to David statements that he has never made. All very bizarre and I didn't believe in any way coincidental. So yesterday morning I tweeted Mr. Silverman. Later yesterday afternoon I emailed him. And I said, please come on the programme to tell us why you believe that the man is anti-Semitic, why David Icke is anti-Semitic, and let's have a broader discussion then about what anti-Semitism means. And I assured them and him that they would be treated with the utmost courtesy and we would have a conversation. So I didn't hear from them. So this morning, I tweeted them and emailed them again, and they eventually got back to me. I want to reiterate, if you went to the event on Saturday, if you've ever genuinely attended a David Icke talk, a 12-hour talk by David Icke, if you were there and if you came away thinking the man is racist and is anti-Semitic, call me on 0161 408 1984. Do not call me if you are a supporter of David's work and if you are, if you've been following him and if you generally agree with his theories on Zionism. Don't call me. Looking for dissenters, and I'll tell you why in a minute. So they got back to me today anyway, the campaign against anti-Semitism. Hi Richie, thank you for your interest and for the invitation to appear on your show. We do not normally give interviews to digital-only stations. We do not normally give interviews to digital-only stations. Then they said, with regards to David Icke, we can, however, provide the following comment. And they just repeated and regurgitated that Steven Silverman, the Director of Investigations and Enforcement, and Enforcement at Campaign Against Anti-Semitism, says that David Icke is a modern-day hate preacher who seeks to spread the beliefs of the Jewish conspiracy, blah, 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 blah. Then, they went on to say to me today, with regard to the definition of anti-Semitism, we called for Theresa May to adopt the international definition of anti-Semitism, which you can find on our website, antisemitism.uk/definition. Pretty shabby that, eh? Digital radio. First of all, give me a break. It's all digital radio now. It's all DAB. It's all internet. It's all apps. And the TuneIn app, which is the biggest provider of radio programs and stations in the world, we're on there and we have thousands of followers. It's all very unsportsmanlike, I said today to a friend of mine. Poor form, old chap. Poor form. What you're doing, basically, is throwing out allegations against a man. You're casting aspersions on his character. And then you are running and hiding. Because you don't want to engage. Because your evidence is flimsy, threadbare. It's not even flimsy and threadbare, is it? Doesn't exist. There's no evidence. None. Now, before they emailed me this statement today, before they emailed me, I first of all tweeted them and said, show me some courtesy, please respond. Now, a guy called Marlon Solomon, who claims to live in Manchester, I say claims to, he probably does, I don't know. I don't know anything about him. He's a blogger of some description. And on the 4th of January, he wrote a blog basically saying that David Icke is a fascist and why we should care very much about his appearance, his forthcoming appearance at the O2 Apollo. Now, Solomon never bothered his arse going to the Apollo on Saturday to in any way confirm what he was saying in his blog, which is a long-winded piece of puerile claptrap which goes nowhere, rehashing and repeating and regurgitating tired old bollocks about David, long debunked, as I said yesterday, by prominent members of the Jewish community. So when I tweeted the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism today to say, come on guys, what's going on? This guy, this Marlon Solomon, he said, ask me. So I asked him. I asked him, and I asked him again, and I said, email me your details, and he was ignoring me. And as he was ignoring me, he was tweeting others. But I'm like a dog with a bone, I was persistent, so eventually he emailed me. What did he say in the email? Can't make tonight. I might come on in the future. Oh dear, oh dear, oh dear, oh dear. Now I said he was gutless, which he said was an insult. That isn't an insult. It is a gutless thing to do. To jump into a conversation I was having with the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism, in which I was clearly asking them to come on tonight, to say, ask me. Then when he was asked, he ran and he hid. Ran and hid. When he volunteered to come on, he knew I was talking about tonight when I was tweeting Silverman. He knew it. And this is what they do, these people. They play with people's lives. Call them racists. They harass venues like the O2. And, well, they move on to another target. They offer no evidence. We'll come to evidence in a minute. You're going to be laughing quite hard shortly. No evidence. They move on to another target. Now, in David, of course, they picked on the wrong target. Because most people, when they're accused of anti-Semitism, their first instinct is to condemn anti-Semitism. Now, I don't know why anybody does that. I don't know why Jeremy Corbyn has done it and others in the past. Your party's anti-Semitic. Well, we condemn anti-Semitism wherever it exists. What the hell is that all about? What are you doing that for? That's self-evident. Don't say that. Say, who said I was anti-Semitic? Based on what? Go for them. I don't mean aggressively. I don't mean bullying. In a bullying manner. Go for them. Stand up for yourself. What do you mean? Garbage. Have you even read what I've written? Have you ever come to one of my talks? That's the way to do it. None of this, oh, we condemn it. Garbage! You're on the back foot straight away. Like I said earlier on, I understand they've been flooded with emails today from people who are at the O2 flooded. We've received copies of many. Now, these friends of Israel, these Zionists, hiding behind charities, who funds these people, I wonder? Where are they getting the money to take prosecutions against private citizens? I say prosecutions because they're currently prosecuting a woman who wrote a song, I understand. I was looking at an article in the Mail today. Where are they getting the money for that? That's something I'm looking into. And I'm pretty good at looking into stuff. I'll be reporting on that soon enough. Intellectual lightweights. I mean, we're dealing with intellectual lightweights and we're dealing with cowards. Bedroom-dwelling keyboard warriors who troll people and say things about people, given the opportunity to come on what is virtually a national programme, such as the size of our audience. That's not bragging. It's just a fact. What did he do? Run and hide. Now, I mentioned last night, and I'm mentioning again today, in the campaign against anti-Semitism's internal correspondence amongst themselves, and in the email they sent to the O2 warning them off David and the event, they did link to a video they said was proof that David Icke was racist and in fact he was anti-Semitic. I swear to you, and you know you're dealing with a professionally produced programme here, there's no smoke and mirrors, there's no spin. This is the evidence produced by the campaign against anti-Semitism. This is the evidence they say proves that David Icke is guilty of anti-Semitism. I kid you not. Have a listen.
First of all, we as a human race have got to get our freaking heads around what this is, because it ain't what we're told it is. It's not about what's right and beneficial for Jewish people. Jewish people are its victims, not its beneficiaries. Jewish people have been hung out to dry again and again by this crowd that claim to have their best interests at heart, like hell they do. That's why I call this Rothschild Zionism. It was created by them, it is controlled by them to this minute, and it was created as a secret society within the web to massively contribute to the manipulation and control of our global society and individual countries, etc., etc. It's Rothschild Zionism. Anti-Zionism is not anti-Semitism, not that anti-Semitism means what we think it does, because Zionism is not about Jewish people. It, even in its play-out way or world, it is a political system, a political philosophy. At its core, it is a secret society putting its agents in places of power. One of the very few things that Joe Biden, Vice President of the United States, has ever said, which is true, is you don't have to be Jewish to be a Zionist. Because of the propaganda, we equate Zionism with Jewish people. It's not how it is. To a very, very large extent. How many people know this? How many Jewish people around the world are protesting, have organizations created to protest against Zionism? Zionism and Judaism are diametrically opposed. Zionism is state-organized terror. How many times do we see this in the newspapers? Never. End of Zionism equals peace. Israel, stop killing Palestinians. I am Jewish and I want that. Why don't we hear about this? We condemn any Zionist aggression against Iran. I thought every Jewish person in the world wanted to bomb Iran. That's what the media seemed to give us an indication about. Another Jew against Zionism. Over and over. Zionist spokesmen do not represent world Jewry. How many people... I thought Ahmadinejad of Iran is supposed to be the great demon of all Jewish people. Ah, look at it. The demonization comes from Rothschild Zionism. We've been totally misled about what it is. Rothschild dynasty created Israel. It paid for the first people out of Europe to go and people Israel after the war. It paid for the building of the Knesset. It paid for the building of the Supreme Court building with all its Illuminati symbols all over it. And some of the people who've broken out of the family, I quote one of them in in my book, have actually said, and as I've been saying for years, because it's bloody obvious, that Israel is not the homeland of Jewish people. It is the fiefdom of the Rothschild dynasty, created out of Rothschild Zionism, a secret society. And Rothschild Zionism has been used via Israel to devastate, slaughter, torture an entire nation of human beings while claiming to be against terrorism. This is the dictionary definition of genocide: the systematic and widespread extermination or attempted extermination of an entire national, racial, religious or ethnic group. Never can what is happening in Palestine and Gaza have been described so accurately. More and more people killed through war, killed through bombing attacks, killed through shootings, killed through lack of food and adequate medical care. Gaza, the most crowded piece of land on earth, is little more, ironically, than a concentration camp. And the world looks on.
Right. That's the evidence put forward by the campaign against anti-Semitism to suggest that David Icke is a racist anti-Semite. I don't need to say any more, really, on that. One of the things that, I mean, that's probably 5.5 minutes of a 25-minute clip. One of the things David goes on to talk about is how Jewish Americans make up about 2% or just under of the overall population in the United States. 2%, right? And many of those Jewish Americans, of course, won't be Zionists and will be absolutely against the policies and the activities of the Israeli government. But he goes on then to the reason bringing that up, to talk about the amount of Zionists and Jewish lobbied and Jewish we're talking about AIPAC here, the American Israeli Public Affairs Committee, how many of these people ended up in very, very senior positions in the administrations of Obama and W. Bush and Clinton and so on, so on, so on. And I was thinking about this today. I was thinking about Cynthia McKinney, who was on this program, has been on it many times, the two-time Georgia congresswoman, the first African-American congresswoman ever to win a seat in Congress from the state of Georgia. And she told me in great detail on the program around about a year ago, she's been on since, but she told me about the extent of the control of the AIPAC lobby acting on behalf of the Israeli government, the extent of their control on US politics. And this is worth playing again. Cynthia McKinney talking to me about AIPAC.
I tell you what was an eye-opener for me when during my very first campaign was the American Israel Public Affairs Committee, because I had never seen anything like what I experienced with them was sheer torture. What happened was I received a fax from them, and the fax said it was like a pledge, and I needed to, you know, sign my name and send it back to them, and they would keep a record, you know, that you made this pledge that you were going to support Israel. And so it had some stipulations on there, you know, military superiority, aid, what else? Oh, Jerusalem was the capital city. And I said, I'm not even sworn in yet. Can you give me a chance to get involved, to get inside the system, learn the issue, and then I'll get back to you?
Brilliant, yeah. Common sense.
Common sense, maybe, but not political practice. I was hounded from that moment on, whether it was a women's organization or an environmental organization. What I learned was that the operatives for the Israeli lobby, they control women's organizations, environmental organizations. It really didn't matter what peace organizations, everything is a fraud. And so I would say, okay, I want to get your endorsement from the environmentalists or the women's organizations. And I would get a call saying, well, did you sign the pledge? Now, this ostensibly is from a women's organization. I'm a woman. I'm the only woman running.
Yeah.
And I needed to sign the pledge before I could even get looked at. Peace organization. You signed the pledge. Environmental organization. Oh, we can't support you. You didn't sign the pledge. What I learned, of course, I went through and did a whole lot of researching. And then I discovered that Gus Savage, member of Congress from Chicago, had also been targeted by them before my arrival. And he put his experience on the congressional record for the world to see if they, you know, would care to read about it. And what he said is what I discovered. And that is that every aspect of the political process is in some way or other controlled or influenced by people who are affiliated with the pro-Israel lobby. So the name of the organization might be the New Jersey Garden Club, but in actuality, it's them. And so what his experience was that his opponent was getting thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars from organizations like the Garden Club. That's an example that Gus Savage used. And he started investigating to say, well, why is the New Jersey Garden Club contributing money to my opponent in Chicago? And then he found the links. And that's what happened to me. I had people from all over the United States sending money to my opponent just at the word. And then we were able to come by a letter where the person who was soliciting funds for my opponent said she's not friendly to Israel. I had one person to write a letter. He was writing a letter all over Georgia. And that letter said, when we go to her office, we are received very well. And she always meets with her constituents. She votes very well on our issues. We have no complaint with her representation except for Israel. And for that reason, this person was writing a letter saying, you know, for that reason, he wasn't going to support me and was asking the people who received the letter not to support me either.
What level of I'm struggling for the words here because it's extraordinary, this. How many men and women in the United States who take an interest in current affairs would know that goes on, Cynthia? I would guess it's very, very small.
It's very small. And that's why they are able to get away with it. So what I did was I went public. You know, I mean, I would have people call me up. Like I had this one guy, he's a comedian. He called me up and he said, I'd like to do a fundraiser for you. And we go 2-3 weeks into the planning and I think, wow, I'm going to have a fundraiser. And then they pop the question, did you sign the pledge? And I'd have to say, no, I didn't. And then they would hang up the phone, click up. And I got that over and over again. I had one event with Tipper Gore. We were already all the way into the planning. And lady had offered to do, to host it at her house. We're all the way in, invitations in the mail, out, gone. And then she asked me, did you sign the pledge? So now I've got Tipper Gore coming to town. I've got invitations hitting the mail. And she tells me that I can't have the event at her house if I don't sign the pledge.
I don't sign the pledge. It's exactly 15 minutes to the top of the hour. This is why the campaign against anti-Semitism will not debate in public somebody like David Icke or a presenter or a producer like me, because they know that they're going to be challenged on these issues. They're going to be challenged on going way back to the Balfour Declaration. They're going to be challenged about the behaviour of the State of Israel right up until including the present day, 1948, the ethnic cleansing of Palestine, all of this, who the Rothschild banking cartel are. These are the reasons they won't come on programmes like this and debate us. Of course they'll speak to Newsnight or BBC Radio 5 Live whenever they get the chance, because the interview, the segment will be 3 or 4 minutes long and they won't be asked a single question. They certainly won't be. We're going to leave it for there for now. Like I said earlier on, it's a real shame these people didn't have the gumption to accept our invitation to come on the programme and give over a segment, a full segment of the programme to discussing it. However, I leave the invitation wide open. If anybody connected with the campaign against anti-Semitism or Marlon Solomon or anybody else who claims, without ever having attended a DavidIcke.com, excuse me, a David Icke talk or anything like that, or ever have having read a book, if they want to come on this programme and tell me and our listeners why they think David Icke is anti-Semitic, they are welcome to do so. But they won't. And they won't because the evidence they offered is that clip I played earlier on of David explaining exactly what Zionism is. I'm not going to go over it. Why it's as anti-Judaism as it gets. Why it is a plague on the Jewish people themselves. Leave it there. Right, 13 minutes to the top of the hour. Like I said, someday. Someday they might, you know, get out of their bedrooms, get away from their computers and their social media, and man up or woman up and come on, in the interest of fairness and fair play, have a rational discussion about what anti-Semitism constitutes. I'm going to say for the final time what my position is. And I'm going to give you what my position on Israel is. Israel is an apartheid state. It is a barbaric, murderous, human rights abusing country. Government, I should say. Government. Government in Tel Aviv, who keeps thousands, hundreds of thousands of people imprisoned in the biggest open-air prison in the world. Tortures them. Tortures their children. Detains their children illegally. Defies the United Nations by building properties on occupied territory, bulldozing homes, terrorizing people, terrorizing children. And if that isn't bad enough, what's really behind that and the reasons that goes on? That's what these people are terrified of. Hence, when anybody talks about it, anti-Semitism. I support the BDS movement. I support sanctioning Israel, you anti-Semite. You're anti-Semitic. You're anti-Semitic. You're racist. Netanyahu's a murderer and it's an apartheid state. You're a racist. No, I'm not. We condemn that which goes on in Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, North Korea, Israel. We never stop on this programme talking about human rights abuses by regimes around the world. I'm going to leave it now. I am going to leave it finally. All right, music.
Clapton, It's in the Way That You Use It on the Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com. 7 minutes to the top of the hour. Welcome back. I've just had an email from this guy calling himself Marlon Solomon. And he says, I've been trying to ring your programme and you're a coward and you won't take me on. In the segment where we were hearing from Cynthia McKinney there, I did get a missed call from a mobile phone number. And that was a few minutes ago. I invited this guy on the programme today and the guy said no. He wouldn't come on. He didn't want to come on. He couldn't do it. He was busy. And then he said, I might come on in the future. And now the yellow coward is emailing me saying that he's been trying to get through to the programme. Like I said, we had a call from a mobile phone number right in the middle of the Cynthia McKinney segment there. Kind of pathetic that, if it is him. I reiterate again, I'm happy to take anybody on this programme. This guy was offered the right of reply today on behalf of the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism, which hadn't the courage to come on the programme and take me on. Cowards, these people. Cowards. Despicable cowards who, like I said, scream about people online and call people names and then run away and then email me as we approach the top of the hour to say, oh, I've been calling you. You know, you had the whole hour to come on the programme. In fact, you had all day to agree to come on the programme, if indeed it is you. Cowards. Despicable, gutless, spineless cowards. It's all they are. I want to leave it. 5.5 minutes to the top of the hour. Don't forget, coming up in the second hour, can't wait for this. We're going to be chatting with Linda Moulton Howe. Now, anybody who's interested in ufology and who's read about ufology, who's interested in the cosmos, are we alone, are we not alone, historical evidence of contact, you really don't want to miss that. She joins the programme in the second hour, as I said, and I will be taking questions, so you can tweet those to at Richie Allen Show, email richie@richieallen.co.uk. Simple as that, back in a minute.
Do not risk putting another pound in your bank account until you've heard this message. It's Jim Rickards here, best-selling author of Currency Wars and The Death of Money. But today I'm urging you to claim a free copy of my brand new book, The Road to Ruin. Visit theroadtoruin.co.uk for full details now. Inside, I uncover the financial elite's secret Ice-9 plan to take full control of your hard-earned cash. To see how, visit theroadtoruin.co.uk right away. It's not too late to prepare. Claim your free copy at theroadtoruin.co.uk today.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbayerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Good stuff. Right, welcome back. It is exactly, I think it's about 2 minutes to the top of the hour. Lots going on. I don't mention this often enough, but I'm going to mention it now. If there's anybody you'd like to recommend as a guest on the programme, you can simply email my producer, Claire Calvey. Now, Claire is at the email address, Claire, C-L-A-I-R-E, C-L-A-I-R-E, at richieallen.co.uk. If you'd like to recommend a guest, it's not that we can always do it, but where possible and where suitable, well, we do endeavour to get people on that you would like to hear from. So that's Claire with an I at richieallen.co.uk. Got to mention again, even though the tickets are sold out, David Icke is at the Helix Theatre in Dublin this coming Saturday, the 21st, as I mentioned yesterday, Red Letter Day in Irish history, when Sinn Féin declared independence and all that. You know all that by now. I've spoken about that at great length, actually, last Easter when we talked about the the 100th anniversary of the Easter Rising. But David is there anyway. The Worldwide Wake Up Tour, despite the hiccup with the German venue, the Stuttgart venue, pulling out very late, as the tour continues in great strides throughout 2017. To find out where he's going to be and to get a ticket to where he's going to be, simply go to theworldwidewakeup.com or go to davidike.com there. 90 seconds to the top of the hour, broadcasting live on alternatecurrentradio.com, Fab Radio 2, and the TuneIn app. This is your Richie Allen Show. Always good to be with you. The quick goal week, the week is flying by. Let's have some more music. Coming up shortly, Linda Moulton Howe joins the show from New Mexico. She's going to be in Manchester very soon. You might have heard the wonderful Eric Von Daniken, who was on the programme a couple of weeks ago, talking about his appearance at the same event, which is Awakening, which is happening here in March. If I'm wrong, if it's April, I'll get the date in a minute. I don't have it to hand. But she's a wonderful woman by the sounds of it. She's going to chat with us, and I love that. Bit of esoteric stuff coming up very soon. In the meantime, more music, Maestro. Don't take the news at the top of the hour much anymore. It doesn't change very much in an hour anyway. For the headlines, go to davidike.com for the alternative view to what's going on in the world. If you want to get away from BBC News and ITN and CNN and all of that. Some very interesting stories today. Check them out. There was a terrible story about a woman, a homeless woman and a child. It's a dreadful story, really, about a woman sleeping rough whose child froze to death in the US. That story's been covered a lot today. And people are asking, you know, are you going to cover it, Richie? Are you going to do something on it? There's not a lot you can do about that, really, is there? Other than say again, how do we tolerate that? How do we tolerate a child dying in the freezing cold? because of homelessness. Going to leave that, right? I'm going to get our next guest on the line so we have more time with her. Now, again, if you want to tweet the programme to ask a question of her or put a comment to her, you can simply tweet at Richie Allen Show. That's at Richie Allen Show. She's an extraordinary woman, our next guest. Very well known, of course, internationally known as an investigative journalist, author and documentary filmmaker. She's also a pretty good radio presenter as well, and she'll talk about her radio programme at some stage today. She's known, of course, for her work in investigating the phenomenon of ufology, or extraterrestrial visitation, contact, and she's also investigated and presented evidence that the US government is colluding with aliens. Now, her CV, as we would say, her resume, is very long and very detailed and very impressive, and I could be here giving it to you for a while, but I am going to recommend you go to her website, which is earthfiles.com. That's earthfiles.com. Let's welcome to the programme Linda Moulton Howe. Linda, welcome to the programme. How are you?
Hi, Richie. It's nice to be here with you, and thank you for the very nice introduction. And for people listening, I would like everyone to know that throughout all of my work, I have always gone the beat of an investigative reporter who is always focused on science, environment, and medicine. Even in that context, are we on Earth interacting with an alien presence? And is there evidence, growing evidence, that out in the Milky Way galaxy and many other galaxies beyond, that we are getting increasing numbers of papers from physicists who are saying that there are strange, unexplained signals in various places in the cosmos? All of that relates to the work that I have been doing since I graduated from Stanford University with a master's degree in communication, and all of the work I did at Stanford was in science, medicine, and the environment. I went on into news in science, medicine, and the environment, and it was my going into the strange animal mutilation phenomena of the world, trying to understand what could take down a 2,000-pound bull and not leave any tracks around the animal's body, no blood or fluid anywhere on the strange pattern of excisions. And it was law enforcement that told me, when I was head of the special projects unit at the CBS station in Denver, making documentaries each year, it was law enforcement, sheriffs and deputies, who had been investigating worldwide bloodless, trackless animal mutilations since the early 60s, who said, Linda, we'll save you some time.
Wow.
The perpetrators of these worldwide animal mutilations are creatures from outer space, quote, unquote. And that, Richie, is why, as a manager in a TV station responsible for doing science, medicine, and environment documentaries and journalism and news reports, that I started on the absolute most difficult path that I can think any human could try. And that is to get to the bottom of what the UK government, the US government, all of the allies of World War II, what do they know about an alien presence? And why did Prime Minister Churchill, General Dwight D. Eisenhower, FDR, Truman, and that whole crowd, why did they decide that they would rather lie and have 50 to 75 years of a policy of denial about something they knew was true, because they were afraid of upending the civilization of humans on this planet? And what I've just said to you, I think, is a summary of what has happened.
Brilliant that you explained how you got into it, because obviously I'm thinking of some of our listeners whom are new to it and might not have heard of you, even though, as I said at the beginning, and I wasn't in any way buttering you up, you are internationally known, and it's why you travel around the world to these conferences. And but there will be people new to this information. The animal mutilations, I mean, it's absolutely fascinating, this. It's horrible at once, you know, it's horrible and spooky and sinister. At the same time, it's fascinating. Can we talk a little bit more about that, Linda, and how widespread that was and is? And without being, I suppose, too gory and upsetting people, What was happening to these animals?
All right. The first worldwide, and it went worldwide, if you want to go back to September of 1967, there were radio broadcasts. It made some of the TV news on September 7th. I think it was September 7th, 1967, if I'm remembering correctly. This was a horse. Her name was Lady, a reporter in Southern Colorado. In talking with farmers and ranchers, got the sex wrong, got the name wrong. Before he died, I got to personally talk with the owner of this horse that I'm going to describe in a moment. His name was Burl Lewis. Burl lived with his wife, Nellie, on a big ranch in a place called Alamosa, Colorado. If you go to a U.S. map, you go to Colorado, you go to Denver, go down almost straight south, and a little to the west, at the bottom of the state of Colorado, not far from the New Mexico border, and you will see Alamosa and the great sand dunes in that area, which has had many, many animal mutilations since this one that went worldwide in 67. But this is a perfect one to start off with in description, because the high strangeness is what was hitting law enforcement right from the beginning. They'd had many other animal mutilations before this one. They just weren't talking. This is the one that went worldwide because Burl and Nellie Lewis were known so well by the community, and they talked with the local newspaper, and they did the first story, and that's what went around the world. Here is what happened. Nellie's favorite horse was this female Appaloosa called Lady. Not Snippy. That was a reporter's mistake. Said it was a male gelding named Snippy. That was all wrong. It was a female Appaloosa named Lady, and Lady was Nellie Lewis's favorite horse. She saw this horse, fed this horse, washed this horse. She loved this horse like a part of the family. And one night, a couple of days before September 7th, she couldn't find Nellie, or couldn't find the horse that was missing, a Lady. And so her husband knew, her family knew, and they just kept assuming that maybe Lady had gone off on some, who knows, adventure and would come back. But as each hour went by after the first day and night, they became extremely worried. And Burl Lewis started searching and sending people out to search. And in some sand dunes, a few miles from the ranch house, they found Lady. But I'm going to start with what they found first. About 100 feet from her body, there were dozens of hoof prints of a horse, as if the horse had reared up. So the front legs are up. The back legs, the hooves of only the back legs, are making a circle of dozens of imprints in the pure sand dune type soil of that area. 100 feet they walk because they could see the horse. There was not a single track between the circle of those back hooves and her body. And when they got to her body, they could see that there was not a single hoof mark, not hers, not anything else's, around a body that they could not comprehend what they were looking at. The entire neck and head of Lady was stripped of all flesh, everything down to bone. But the rest of the body of the horse looked so fresh and so untouched that one person said it was as if this horse, even though there was nothing but bone, should still be able to get up because the horse looked so alive outside of all of the missing tissue from the lower neck up. Then, in the chest, a doctor who was a hematologist and pathologist working in Denver, Colorado at the time at the University of Colorado Medical Center. His name was John Altshuler. Nobody knew about him in 67, but he heard about the strange horse death and that there were calls for any expert medical help because Burl and Nellie Lewis left this horse where they found it for quite a while. And Dr. Altshuler decided secretly, because he did not want to jeopardize anything in his medical career because he had a wife and kids, he drove down without anyone knowing. He went to the site. He met Burl and Nellie Lewis. He went out to the horse. He asked them to only refer to him as a doctor from Denver. And in some of the newspapers from that period of time, you will hear about the mysterious doctor from Denver. Well, I'm telling you who it was. Dr. John Altshuler, MD, a very, very successful and extremely competent hematologist and pathologist until he died in his 70s. And he comes to work with me in Denver, Colorado in the 80s into the 90s on animal mutilations because of his private trip to see this horse named Lady near Alamosa on the Burl and Nellie Lewis, their ranch. And he tells me what it is that he saw. And he gave me permission to put his first and only professional statement on the record in my first book, An Alien Harvest, that came out in 1989. Everything I'm telling you is in that book with photographs and with the statement by Dr. Altshuler that when he knelt down beside this horse that had no neck flesh and no head flesh, he was looking at a chest, the mediastinum, in which it was open and every single major organ from the lungs, the heart, gallbladder, all of it was gone.
And no sign of it, Linda. There wasn't, it didn't turn up somewhere else, the tissue that was missing.
Oh, no. And he's examining, as a trained medical doctor who is a hematologist and a pathologist, and being able to put his hands inside the chest of this horse, and he realizes that where the heart and the lungs and the stomach and the diaphragm and the gallbladder and everything were, he is seeing absolutely perfect bloodless excisions, and there is not a drop of hemoglobin in the chest of this horse, at which point he knew then in 1967 that he was at the site of something that was impossible to explain by any human medicine of any kind. And he wrote his notes, did a diary, talked with people, and no one until I did my book, An Alien Harvest, in 1989, ever heard from him in his own words about the impossible, but there it was, mutilation of the horse Lady. Now, when we started working together, there had been literally, the estimate is, conservative estimate, that between the 60s and when I did my film, A Strange Harvest, about the animal mutilation phenomena, starting in the fall of 79, it was first broadcast as a 90-minute special on the CBS station in Colorado on May 25th, 1980. So between the early 60s and 1980, it was estimated by law enforcement that there had been at least 10,000 animal mutilations in North America alone.
That's an incredible number, Linda.
Okay, and right now I can send you the data. SENASA in Argentina, Brazil, but specifically in Argentina. SENASA is their version of the Department of Agriculture that we have in the United States. Between the year 2002 and approximately 2007, a five-year period, they announced that from veterinarians and from farmers in Argentina, they had reported at least 3,000 bloodless, trackless animal mutilations. I've reported about this endlessly, but to leverage the so-called mainstream New York, Washington, D.C., L.A. Media to take this seriously has proved to me astonishing. I am an Emmy Award-winning, Peabody Award-winning, Ohio State Award-winning, many festivals, award-winning producer, writer, director, editor. I go by the same rules that the New York Times investigative reporters go by. And I have reported and shown and been even have been asked to make presentations at National Veterinarian Association meetings with sheriffs. And you cannot get the Washington Post, the New York Times, the Los Angeles Times, the Chicago Tribune, the Boston Globe. You cannot get them to cover it. You can't get NBC, ABC, CBS, and CNN, and MSNBC, and all of that to cover it. And it is even difficult to penetrate the so-called media around the world in radio, because most people are terrified of having their reputations or their profession somehow hurt by actually reporting forensic evidence. That's fear, what I'm doing.
Fear of ridicule, Linda. Now, right. you're telling me that you and I are having a chat. Now, it's great to have you on the program. It's earthfiles.com, Linda's website. She'll be here in Manchester real soon. We'll tell you more about that shortly as well. You're telling me that as you and I are talking tonight, and this is brand new to me now. I'd heard bits and pieces over the years, but I told you today, honestly, it's a new area of research for me. I'm fascinated by it. I'm thrilled by it, but I know very little about it. So tonight, farmers in different parts of the world will come across animals mutilated like this, Linda, and they will be scratching their heads. They won't know what's going on.
Absolutely. I just did two days ago an earthfiles.com report about all of the bloodless half-cat mutilations that are going on around London and Manchester right now in England. In the United States, I have talked with farmers in Oregon, in the eastern part of Oregon. They had a mutilation that I have photos. And these are reports that I put in the Real X-Files by subscription only on purpose at Earth Files, because I want the people who genuinely are trying to understand what is really happening on this planet, this solar system, and this universe to be able to see for themselves what animal mutilations look like. And so in the Real X-Files section of earthfiles.com, which also has hundreds of reports in science and medicine and the environment, the Real X-Files, you can see for yourself. And right now, I'm past the 2,500 report list at Earth Files. I'm thrilled by that. And if you go and do a quick search, you will see that in animal mutilations alone, whether it's cats, whether it's dogs, deer, elk, marmots, every domestic animal you can think of. Most people only hear about horse and cattle mutilations. It's every single animal you have ever heard. Right now in the area of around London, there have been foxes. There have been a royal python. There's a royal monitor lizard, cattle, goats, sheep, and then the half cats. The half cats are literally physically cut right in half. Wow. And there is no blood. There is no blood on the hair. There is no blood in the carcass. They are cut in half. And I work with John Altshuler on one of these when in Vancouver, British Columbia in Canada in the early 1990s, they had something like 37 half cats reported to various veterinarians and the Humane Society in Vancouver. And Dr. Altshuler said, please get me one of those half cats. Sometimes the front half with the head, the ears, it looks like a puppet. Everything is taken out. Everything in the throat, the upper chest, it's all gone. It's like a hand puppet. There's no blood. It's totally dry. And so we got the front half of a cat. It was an Angora cat. And Dr. Altshuler had been doing the same examinations in the large animals and other animals beyond cats, and finding and reporting and showing in my book, An Alien Harvest. You can see the medical forensic evidence from a microscope that shows the collagen is cooked, the hemoglobin is cooked, wow, at the excision lines of every animal I am talking to you about. And when we got the half cat from Vancouver in the early 90s, which is all of this that I'm discussing, every single thing I've said to you, all of this is at myearthfiles.com. It is a news website I have been doing since 1999. It now has exceeded 2,500 in-depth reports, about 60,000 different photos, maps, illustrations, and I like documents and I like evidence that comes from people who are doctors and forensic explorers. And all of this, the half cat from Vancouver, in that report at Earth Files, you can see the half cat, you can see x-rays of half cats, and Dr. Altshuler was able to show medically that the excision of the half cat, the entire excision of this half cat, had been, the collagen was cooked and the hemoglobin was cooked. So it means it's an instrument of some sort that is cutting with high heat. But here's the kicker again.
Just before you get to that, Linda, let me just jump in, because we're getting lots and lots of questions on this. We're also getting tweets from people. We get hundreds of tweets during the program. We're getting a lot of tweets from people who, they're hearing you loud and clear. And they're saying that they've come across this here in the UK. I've heard from Alex Stoust. I've heard from others who are saying that they heard this. Before you get to that, I'm of the belief, I've come to believe, reluctantly, it must be said, I used to fight against considering this, but that malevolent, interdimensional beings have attempted to and have succeeded in some way to manipulating our reality. Is there any, or has there any consideration been given to maybe it's non-physical beings that have managed to do this? And that would explain the lack of physical evidence, you know, footprints or handprints, that it could be interdimensional, non-physical beings. Has that been considered?
Richie, if you receive from me at least three of the four books I've done, they're 8.5 by 11. They have 400 some pages each book, photographs throughout, documents throughout, forensic evidence throughout, illustrations throughout, maps throughout, every single thing is footnoted and documented. Would you read my three large books on the question you just asked, on the animal mutilations, human abduction syndrome, and other intelligences in this universe coming to me through whistleblowers who have worked in the American intel and military that describe both friendlies and extremely hostile other intelligences our government is dealing with right now? The UK government has been very closely involved with the United States on this since World War II. So has Australia and Canada, the World War II allies. And it is the biggest dark secret that not only is the universe teeming with life, and for people who say, well, then why aren't we getting the signals? It is a naive, provincial attitude of Homo sapiens sapien on Earth that what we would assume advanced intelligences out in the cosmos would do is completely naive. There are hostiles. Reagan was introduced to that in a briefing. And there are friendly allies. It is extremely complicated. And to the heart of the question you just asked about other dimensional intelligences that could fall into the category of hostile intentions, I think the answer is yes. I know that there are people who have worked for the Defense Intelligence Agency and the National Security Agency in this government who communicated with me directly in the early 1990s through FedEx. And what they said to me, I reported in my book's Glimpses of Other Realities. It's a 2-volume book that I did over 8 years. Glimpses of Other Realities, Volume 1, Facts and Eyewitnesses, goes for about 400 pages, and then Volume 2 goes for another 380 pages. It's Glimpses of Other Realities, Volume 2, High Strangeness. I go into the entire communication from the DIA, NSA people who were active, and they raised a huge number of questions, but perhaps most directly to your question is a statement that you can read for yourself in my books. It's also at earthfiles.com in stories that I have done about this. They said, we are dealing with some of the phenomena that are hostile. And the way they used the phrase was, they are neither benign nor neutral.
Right.
Now, what is the vested interest of an advanced intelligence that can fold space-time because that's how they move? We only know Euclidean geometry. You get in a car or a plane or a boat, and you have to spend a lot of time moving along a line around the ball that is Earth. That's the only way humans currently know how to move.
Yeah, and you and I both know that time isn't linear. We know that. And any intelligences greater than ours have no doubt they can manipulate time. Why would they be doing these things to these animals, Linda? Why?
Richie, just let me finish this because this is very important. If we are linear Euclidean geometry that takes so much time on Earth, it is established for me that we are dealing with intelligences in this universe that know already how to control gravity. They know how to bend space-time. Einstein, this is absolutely consistent with Einsteinian physics. If you can control gravity, you can bend space-time. If you can bend space-time, you can move point to point. You can move from 13.7 billion light years from Earth to Earth by stepping through a doorway. And
absolutely,
that has been described in the abduction syndrome over and over. We're in a completely different physics than anything humans are prepared to understand at this point in our evolution. And why animal mutilations? Two reasons were given to me a long time ago. I write about it in huge depth in An Alien Harvest, my first book, and these other two I told you about, the two-volume Glimpses of Other Realities. But this is the bottom line. There are non-humans out there that use tissue, fluid, and various other things on this planet and many other planets for sustenance. That is a nice word that covers a very large territory for what we as humans on this planet call eating food. The second category is genetic harvesting. The genetic harvesting is for rapid cycle cloning of body containers of any kind that the intelligences want, literally, to inhabit either as androids or to inhabit as we might put on a costume or military camouflage. And here you're getting to the most difficult area of all. One man told me in 1983 at a military base when I was starting on trying to do a project, an hour documentary from Home Box Office in New York. And our working title at HBO was the story I was going to try to tell as a documentary filmmaker, UFOs, the ET Factor. And it's a long story covered in depth with all kinds of documentation in my first book, An Alien Harvest, about the HBO project, what happened, my interactions with military and government. And what I'm telling you now is that one of the people that I talked to said these words that I've never forgotten. The U.S. government's greatest concern is who walks on this planet, looks human, and is not. Close quote.
Right. I'm going to do a quick recap. By the way, earthfiles.com is Linda's website. Awakening, the UFO and Conscious Life Expo at Bowler's Exhibition Centre in Manchester is on Saturday, March 4th.
from 9 a.m. right up until 7 p.m. Great speakers. Linda, of course, Eric Von Daniken, Gary Heseltine, among the speakers talking on the day. I'll be there myself. I'm going to, because I've known Eric Von Daniken for a little bit, so I'm going to pop out there and say hello to him and to you, Linda. It's exactly 27 minutes to the top of the hour. Linda, we believe, when I say we believe, I'm not speaking for anybody, I should speak for myself. I subscribe to the holographic universe theory. So therefore, I wouldn't believe that time exists anyway. I said earlier, time isn't linear. That's just my take on things. It's interesting that people have been talking about that theory for years, David Icke and others. It's interesting now that in recent, particularly in the last 2 years, researchers from various academic institutions are now coming forward, including a guy called Rich Tyrrell from NASA, who spoke to me a few weeks back on the programme, still a big cheese at NASA. And they're now beginning to claim, in fact, that the universe is a holographic projection. What we see exists only because we choose to look at it. Where are you with that, Linda? How does that fit in to what you've been researching and writing about for years?
My 90-minute lecture at Contact in the Desert in May at Joshua Tree is going to be on that very subject. And part of the work that I'm doing, is this universe somebody else's computer simulation? What about all of the recent news? I'm focusing on three rings that have come through astronomers and astrophysicists in just the last 2 years, having to do with anomalies in the universe that appear to possibly fall into the category of signaling, intelligent signaling. And I've interviewed people directly, the scientists who are doing the work, and that's what I will be using in this lecture. And then there is what is known as Tabby's star, KIC, with a bunch of numbers. It's called the Kick star. And she is an astronomer at Yale and has been studying for about 3 years a strange brightening and dimming on a star several hundred light years from here. But the dimming and the lighting falls into another hypothesis that is in the Kardashev scale. This was a Soviet scientist who, in answer to the question, how would we on Earth in this solar system, in this backwater of the Milky Way galaxy, ever be able to discern intelligence of any kind in a 13.9 billion light year universe, what would we look for? And one of the characteristics on the Kardashev scale, and Michio Kaku at NYU talks about this, and Hawking has talked about this and others, that if something has a periodicity of high dimming and high brightening, or I should say very low dimming and high brightening, and in this case, this particular star, just in the last year, the research has been published. I've done interviews with people associated with this work. One of the dimmings was as much as 22%. There's been nothing like it. There's nothing like it in the astronomical literature anywhere. And scientists, astrophysicists, and astronomers began saying, what if this is like the Dyson, as another famous scientist who proposed that if you get to a civilization advanced enough, like Michio Kaku would call it civilization 1, 2, 3, and 4, and when you get into 3 and 4, you're talking about civilizations that not only bend space and time, they harvest all the energy they need right from the suns. And they do that by building large structures that will orbit an entire sun. And they have all the energy they need for billions of years. And that is that is actively right now a question about the star. Now, in that context, the holographic universe, it was around 1990, maybe 91, because the book had just come out. That's it. Michael Talbot had written a book called The Holographic Universe. And I was at a conference, I believe it was in Nebraska or Missouri, and Bud Hopkins and I were speakers there. And when we were going to the airport and getting on the airplane, we realized we were on the same flight and we sat next to each other. And this book, The Holographic Universe by Michael Talbot, was a great sensation at that time. And Bud said, I want to tell you something in confidence. Michael Talbot is one of my cases in the human abduction syndrome that I'm studying. And he had already written Missing Time, the book. And he said, here is what Michael told me is the truth about his book, The Holographic Universe, that had just come out. That the entire book was a telepathic download from the extraterrestrial biological entities that were abducting Michael and teaching him.
I didn't know that. That's fascinating. That he would say that. If it is a holographic projection, it changes everything, doesn't it? Because in any projected holographic universe that presumably is controlled by the architect of it, space and time wouldn't exist, and anybody who wanted to move within it would basically just consciously project themselves from one place to another without having to worry about time or a vehicle of any description. That's fair to say, right?
Well, you're asking a very, very intelligent question about a very, very complicated physics. I read just recently, because I'm doing all this work to do these presentations at conferences, back in the spring, April, I believe it was, of 2016 in New York, Neil deGrasse Tyson, who picked up the reins of Carl Sagan and has been doing this follow-up on the Cosmos series on TV, and Elon Musk of Tesla, who wants and is determined to have a settlement on Mars by 2026, says he wants to die on Mars. There were others there. The whole conference in New York City was around the question, are we living in a computer-simulated universe? Elon Musk said that he would wager $1 billion to 1 this is not a natural universe. Now, others who were there, and there have been many, many, many articles about that amazing panel in New York in the spring of 2016, others have brought up this point that if we are in a holographic universe, that has to do with the physical structure of the universe and the implication that something beyond our comprehension was able to create an experiment like in a lab. But as far as Richie, Linda, listeners, trees, birds, water, earth, it does not make any difference because this is the universe we're in. But it means to me a fascinating question. How big are the intelligences in this universe? And Goot at Harvard says there are an infinite number of matter universes nestled within each other or in some sort of complex arrangement, and that each universe has dimensions associated with those universes. A dimension, a different dimension, is defined as, in this universe, Planck constant is the diameter distance between quarks at the center of an atom. If you changed that Planck constant distance between those quarks a trillionth of an inch, you would create a universe that this universe and that universe could never interact with each other. That everything is frequency, that everything relates to the subatomic structure writ large. This universe could be a hologram because scientists working in a lab in another dimension even could have set this universe in motion to study specific questions. Then we and all life in this universe, we become part of this grand experiment. But to us, we're simply trying right now to even understand the origins of standing up primates on Earth. And everything I've been exposed to, documents that I have read with my own eyes, people that I have talked to in military and intel, and going back to the Home Box Office documentary I was working on back in 1983, I was shown a document, and it allegedly was presented to, it was told many years later, to President Carter, Jimmy Carter. And now I was reading in 1983 at Kurland Air Force Base in Albuquerque, and this paragraph said, extraterrestrial biological entities manipulated DNA in already evolving primates to create Homo sapien. All questions and mysteries about the evolution of Homo sapien on this planet have been answered, and this project is closed.
This is fascinating stuff, Lynn, and the time is flying by, and there are a lot of tweets and questions about crop circles and things that we haven't had the time to get to. It's exactly 16 minutes to the top of the hour. We've got Linda for another 7-8 minutes maximum. So if we're energy at our purest form, if we're infinite awareness and we're consciousness, and you and I are having the experience of Linda and Richie within this holographic projection, the central questions are, who or what is the architect of it? Is it a prison? I found it very interesting what you just said there a second ago, because when Rich Terrell from NASA was on the show, he said, like you said, I wonder, he said, if future versions of us have created it. And that's one of those that if you think about that, it'll make your head spin as well. But I put it to him, and he was prepared to accept it as a strong or a reasonably strong possibility that at some stage this projection that we are, you know, observing and experiencing was dreamt up, was designed to enslave us, to entrap us, to prevent us from ever understanding our own capability, Linda. And it was amazing to hear a guy like him and others say, yeah, I'm prepared to accept that as a possibility. And rather than accept that or think that maybe some benevolent force has created it. In fact, it might very well be malevolent. It might very well be sinister. These are incredible questions, right?
Yes, and I have a very interesting insight for you from a scientist who is also an abductee. This goes back to the early 1980s. He was one of the cases that Bud Hopkins was studying. I met, interviewed him for a long time, and we have been friends to this day. He has never wanted to be identified. He was a multi-million dollar lab owner in New Jersey at the time. He was abducted. I won't go into all of the complexities. At one point, as a scientist, the beings that had taken him showed him a three-dimensional holographic screen. At least those would be the words as close as we could come to something that was three-dimensional and seemed to have a lot of stars and starry-related images in it. And then as the ET brought the scientist up to this three-dimensional, would be a hologram there inside of this craft, the being said, look, I'm going to show you what you all do not understand about your universe. And then this hologram just changed. And there were five pairs, very neat rows, two rows, each universe. These were 10 universes paired. So five pairs, if you can get this in your mind's eye, whatever, however that comes into your mind. And the being said, this is the universe you're in. And what you don't understand are all of these couplings to other universes. In your unit, you're one of 10 universes. And at the moment of what you call death, it is necessary that the soul, which is defined in a lot of abduction cases, is an absolute reality. It is like a physical substrate that can record perhaps an infinite number of frequencies from lifetimes. And that, he said, the soul has to change charge for what occurs next. And he said, that's what you all describe in your literature as the tunnel and the light. He said, what's happening is that all souls that are in this universe at the moment of death, because you're in a universe of entropy and all energy winds down, they go through a transition into this paired universe. And he points to the one hooked onto this one on the right. In this universe, everything is exactly the opposite. The skies are white. The stars are black. There is no entropy. Anything that you could throw, it's not going to break. And he said, you come out of this universe where entropy has taken you down to zero, and you come into this universe and everything takes you back to life again in the anti-entropy universe. And he said there can be no direct interface or communication between these two universes because it would be self-annihilating. But that there is the perspective of the ET showing the scientist this group of 10 universes, and that the soul is on an eternal, like a loop, going between these two universes, and did not explain about the other, what would be 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, did not explain the other pairs, the other four pairs. Now, to make that this even expand your mind more, and I think about this a lot, he said he was given the concept that the only souls in this entropy universe are souls that were sent in here by a divine field to be able to recycle out into the universe next door, because this was a universe that was specifically made by the divine field to be the holder of something that we would consider negative, that does not have souls that recycle into the universe next door. Think about that, Richie.
It's incredible stuff, Linda. You know, I'm going to recommend to our listeners that I've tweeted out where they can find tickets to Awakening here in Manchester, where you, along with Eric Von Daniken and Gary Heseltine and many others, will be speaking about these subjects. I want to mention again the website is Earth Files, by the way. That's earthfiles.com. Links there to all the documentation Linda spoke about, plus her books as well. Exciting times, Linda. We're in exciting times. You know, I have a feeling that we're closer to the truth maybe than any generation previously that came before us. And I'm excited about that.
Amen.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah, I think so. Are you looking forward to coming to Manchester? Have you been? I know you've been in the UK before. I know you've done stuff on British TV. Have you been to this city before? Do you know much about it?
No, I've never been up from the Wiltshire South area because I did all these years of crop formation investigations. And I am so looking forward. Mike McGinnis, who has been the organizer of Awakening, he just seems like such a great guy. And people who have been emailing me that they're going to be coming. I am truly excited. And I hope listeners today will come and shake my hand, because those of us who are trying to reach beyond the old paradigms to what the truth is, we should all meet and support each other.
Linda, great to chat with you. I'll be definitely saying hello to you when reiterate the date. It's the 4th of March 2017, of course, this year. A full day with Linda, with Eric Von Daniken, Gary Heseltine and others. I've been invited, so I can't wait to say hello to you both. Thanks for coming on the programme, and enjoy the rest of your day, and more power to you. Thanks, Linda.
Thank you, and God bless everybody.
Fantastic. Linda Moulton-Howe on the line to us there from her home in New Mexico. Earthfiles.com is her website. Now, there were an enormous amount of tweets coming in during that. Very interesting tweets with your take on what Linda was saying. To find what other people were tweeting, just go to Richie Allen Show. When you go to Twitter, put Richie Allen Show in without any spaces, press enter, and you'll see what those others even were saying. The old voice. I was on the phone all day. And then I did the an hour with Maria. Nobody ever invites me onto any radio show for good reason, because I haven't researched any of this information or discovered any of it myself, but I've got opinions on it. but people don't invite me on. But Maria invited me on, had a lovely chat with her. Go to maria.net. Enjoyed that conversation as well about Brexit and about Trump and stuff like that. So the old voice was croaking a bit at the end. Lots more to come on tomorrow's programme at 8 p.m. GMT. Remember to stay in touch with our broadcast partners. I've got to say that. I can't say that enough. AlternateCurrentRadio.com, FabRadio2 in Manchester, and of course, DavidIke.com. That's DavidIke.com. On the whole campaign against anti-Semitism thing and the disappointing response from them refusing to put a spokesman or a spokeswoman on the programme to talk about it, we're just going to leave that. I'm going to leave it there. I did mention earlier on that the Manchester-based blogger, Marlon Solomon, came on to us around about 1:45 at the top of the last hour, saying that he'd been trying to get through to us, and there was a missed call from a mobile number. At that stage, we were winding up the hour anyway, and I was in the middle of playing the important clip from Cynthia McKinney. I'd invited this guy on today, and he declined to come on the programme and was very specific about declining to come on and said he would only ever come on in the future on certain conditions. So I dismissed him out of hand. I understand he's complaining now. Well, look, he was given every opportunity to come on the programme and he chose not to come on. Fair enough. I'm leaving it there. Right, these guys are going to shout anti-Semitism. It's like that quiz game Jeopardy, isn't it? You know, where you, Alex Trebek, right? You are given an answer and then you have to come up with a question. I think that's what Jeopardy is. With these guys, it's always, what is anti-Semitism? And in quiz programmes, their answer is always anti-Semitism. Anti-Semitism, anti-Semitism, anti-Semitism. My final word on it today is to reiterate that speakers like David Icke, and I say speakers like David Icke, there aren't any other speakers like him, 27 years on this journey, because of their lucid, humane, decent, embracing, inclusive debate and discussion about these issues, are going to be targeted by people like these. You know, it's interesting that the campaign against anti-Semitism have been quoting David on Hitler, and none of the quotes that they attributed to David Icke were ever said by David Icke. They're not in any of his books, and they certainly weren't said by him at any of his events. I'm drawing a line under it, because you get into the area of overkill, you get into the area of boring the piss out of your listeners. For this week anyway, I'm done with it. They can troll, they can scream anti-Semitism all they want. It's never going to shut people up like David Icke. It's never going to stop me interviewing the many men and women from Jewish backgrounds who've come on this programme to talk about it. We'll continue to do it, and we couldn't give a rat's arse, one way or another, what people say about it, who only hate, because that's all they do, they hate. They're full of hate and spite. They don't want to debate. They don't want to embrace anybody. They don't want to come on programmes like this and have a rational, man-to-man chat about things where we might solve something, where we might get to the bottom of something. That's it. I'm done with it. We're going to tell you all about tomorrow's show on social media tomorrow. Until then, leaving you with Aslan from Dublin and Christy Dignam. That was the Richie Allen Show. Thanks to Linda Moultonhouse. Thanks for listening to me in the first hour. Until tomorrow, look after yourselves and one another. This is the name of this song. Bye for now. Enjoy the rest of your day or evening.